Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
These medications were just recently approved, and they were actually quite controversial. They're anti-complement inhibition, which means they target the inflammatory cascade.
Today, Drs. Patel and Armstrong join the podcast to discuss geographic atrophy. Where do we stand, and where are we going in this PureDirect Special Spotlight? All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporters.
Hello, I'm Nimish Patel. I'm an assistant professor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School, and I'm also the director of pediatric retina and the associate fellowship director of Richard Retinal Surgery.
And I'm Grayson Armstrong. I'm the director of ophthalmology emergency services at Mass Eye and Ear, an instructor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School, and a retina specialist.
Today, we'll be focusing on the treatment landscape of geographic atrophy, including currently available therapies and late-stage clinical development. We're also wanting to talk about experimental approaches on the horizon. How's that sound?
Sounds good, Nimish. Let's begin with what's available today. How are you currently incorporating FDA-approved therapies for GA care into what's already observed in practice?
That's a big question. So these medications were just recently approved, and they were actually quite controversial. They're anti-complement inhibition, which means they target the inflammatory cascade inside the eye. And they are intravitreal injections being dosed either every month or every other month. And we were wondering, are they really efficacious? There was some suggestion in the trial that they slow geographic atrophy by about 20% per year. But does that translate to a vision benefit? We weren't able to prove that in the short term. There is also some safety concerns with a high risk of CNV being up to 9 to 10% per year, as well as a 1 in 4,000 rate of retinal vasculitis in one of the medications. So I'm approaching these with a lot of caution, but there are some patients that are really ideal candidates. I think the ones that are really in a need of these medications, or at least willing to try, are ones that have clearly lost vision in one eye already. So maybe they've lost vision down to 2200 in one eye. And the other eye, they had good vision. They were 20/20, and we saw that they had atrophy, but not in the center. And now it's encroaching on the fovea, and they're starting to notice limited vision in their good eye. And we kind of know where they're headed. And so I think this is really the ideal patient to start treatment in if you're thinking about it and if the patient is ready for it, as long as they understand the risks and benefits. I usually start treatment, if we're going to, in the worse eye first, to make sure, especially, that you're not going to have this off-target effect of the vasculitis. The studies have shown that this really only occurs on the first injection. So the theory is that you may be more safe if you start it in the worsening eye. So that's kind of where we're starting it at this point. Also, the study has demonstrated a nearly as good effect with every other month treatment as with every month treatment. And so I try to start patients slow and say, hey, if you want to start this, let's try not to commit to every month right away. Let's start with every other month. If it works for you, we can increase that. There are some patients who may even want every third month, and we've been willing to try that off-label. But we tell them that there's no data on that, so we don't understand if that is as efficacious as every other month.
We're lucky that several agents are in late-stage development. What investigational treatments are you watching most closely, and how might they expand or improve current management?
It's an exciting time. There's a lot of different avenues that are being investigated. They all kind of fall into the same pathway of complement inhibition or anti-inflammatory or cell protection. It's very interesting to us because when I was in residency and fellowship, we had no treatments at all. And so now that we have crossed the barrier to get some FDA-approved treatments, it seems like there are going to be others down the line. And that's also what I tell patients who are considering treatment, is that it may be worthwhile to hold over, even if the medications we have are not perfect. If you can hold your vision until something potentially better comes along, that's pretty good. So I think there are a couple studies that are undergoing, and I think ones that are exciting to me are those that are targeting a different treatment modality. So the current treatments that we have are intravitreal, but there are some medications under investigation that are looking at subcutaneous delivery and targeting systemic complement inhibition instead of local. And that could be a little bit more tolerable for patients. Instead of having to come into the office, potentially they could do subcutaneous at home. and we could monitor their disease activity without having to bring them in for an injection. These patients tend to be on the older side. You know, some of the trials enrolled patients with an average age around 78, and the life expectancy for these patients is 10 years at least on annuitized life tables. So we need to make sure that we have a treatment option that's feasible for them to maintain vision over the long run. So potentially a subcutaneous route is more tolerable.
There's also increasing activity in earlier stage research. What experimental approaches show potential in meaningfully changing the trajectory of geographic atrophy?
So I'd say at this point, there's probably nothing else outside of complement inhibition that's really ready for prime time. There's a lot of research kind of on a broader level, also in glaucoma and Alzheimer's disease and neuroprotection, regenerative medicine. But I think these are not really ready for prime time, and it's not really something we talk to a lot of patients about. We tell them there's a lot of research in this area, but nothing that's really in a late-stage clinical trial or on the burden of being approved really soon that we want to bring up to them at this point. So it's something that's definitely coming in the future. It's considered the holy grail neuroprotection and would solve a lot of problems both in the retina and elsewhere. So it's not ready yet, but it could be coming in the future.
Given the complexity of this disease, do you foresee combination therapy or staged approaches becoming part of future management?
It's an interesting question, and I think it's a really black box at this point. You know, let's say you had an intravitreal therapy approved and a systemic. Would you use both? Would you use some? Would you use neither? We can lean on some of these lessons we've learned about in other fields of ophthalmology, let's say uveitis. Sometimes if you have bilateral disease, you may be more inclined to use systemic. If you're worried about local complications, you may be more inclined to use systemic. Let's say you have one eye that you're treating, and let's say you want to do it every other month, and you're worried about the risks associated with systemic, then you may go more for the intraocular. And let's say you had really bad disease and you're wanting to had a patient who wanted to do everything. That patient may be beneficial for combination therapy. Some of the risks associated with systemic complement inhibition has been potential risk of meningitis. And in the trials, they're asking these patients to undergo vaccine to prevent this. So that's one thing to think about. If you had an immunocompromised patient already who may already be at risk for some of these systemic infections, then the local therapy may be better. But it could be patient personalized dependent as we get to that point, but we're not there yet. Currently, only intravitreal therapies, and we'll have to see how it goes.
Well, finally, how do you see the treatment landscape shifting in the next few years? What should clinicians be preparing for now in terms of patient identification, imaging, and follow-up infrastructure?
There's so many things that are coming this way, and I think part of it was, again, we thought geographic atrophy was one, a slow-moving disease, something we didn't really have treatment for. So it wasn't something we always paid a lot of attention to. And even within wet AMD, there are areas of atrophy, and we didn't think those were really of much consequence and nothing could be done. So there's a few things. I'd say number one is there's a need to refer patients who could potentially benefit from treatment. And I think this goes from the optometrists, local ophthalmologists, and comprehensive doctors to the retina specialists. There's a lot of patients out there, I think, with geographic atrophy that are not being diagnosed or referred at this time. I think second of all is going to be, my guess is there will be a greater adoption of these anti-complement treatments. I think at the beginning, I was equally skeptical as everybody. I didn't use any for almost a year plus until we saw some of the data come out. But as we go through, we are starting to see in the longer-term data and the extension studies of the original trials that the effect is being maintained and the reduction in GA lesion growth is being true even over multiple years. So eventually it is going to help vision, and there are some recent studies suggesting benefits in a pre-specified endpoint for some of the trials in terms of vision acuity and visual function. So I think some of the skepticism will decrease over time, and I think the utilization of these medications is going to increase. The major thing that we really need is a way to monitor the disease. So in glaucoma or other ophthalmology conditions, we can tell the patients, hey, are you getting better or are you getting worse? And we can do this with the OCT in diabetes. We can show them the retinal thickness and say, hey, this injection, look, it decreased your thickness. That's great. Or in glaucoma, we started this drop and it decreased your pressure. That's great. We don't really have that in this disease and geographic atrophy. It's not easy to measure the geographic atrophy in clinic. Plus, let's say you're treating both eyes. How do we know that they're doing better than they would have without treatment? We actually have no idea. We can only compare them to historical controls. So I think there's a need for good autofluorescence imaging on these patients, an automated algorithm to tell us how much atrophy there is, and then further data collection on different types of GA based on lesion size to predict the growth rate so we can show patients, here's a normative curve for what your type of geographic atrophy will do. This is how fast we expect it to progress and this is what you're doing. And that way we can get buy-in for the patients and show them that we're actually making a benefit if we indeed are.
Well, this has been an amazing discussion. Thank you for joining me today to review current therapies, late-stage pipeline agents, and experimental treatments for GA.
My pleasure. And thank you for joining us today.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my flash briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Patel and Armstrong. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.